I'm not a hunter, but I'm told that in places like in the Arctic, where indigenous people sometimes might hunt a wolf, they'll take a double-edged blade and they'll put blood on the blade and they'll melt the ice and stick the handle in the ice so that only the blade is protruded, and that a wolf will smell the blood and wants to eat, and it'll come and lick the blade trying to eat. And what happens is when the wolf licks the blade, of course, he cuts his tongue and he bleeds and he thinks he's really having a good meal. He drinks and he licks and he licks, and of course he's drinking his own blood and he kills himself. That's what the imperialists did to us with crack cocaine. You got these young brothers out there thinking that they're getting something that they're going to make a living with. They're getting something they can buy a car like the white people have cars. Why can't I have a car? They're getting something that they can get a piece of gold. The white people have gold. Why can't I have gold? They're getting something to get a house. The white people have a house. Why can't I have a house? And they actually think that it's something that's bringing resources to them, but they're killing themselves just like the wolf who's licking the blade, and they're slowly dying without knowing. That's what's happening to the community. You with me on that? That's exactly and precisely what happens to the community. And instead of blaming the hunter who put the damn handle and the blade in the ice for the wolf, that what happens is the wolf gets blamed for trying to live. That's what happens in our community. You don't blame the person, the victim, you blame the oppressor. Imperialism, white power is the enemy. Was the enemy when it first came to Africa, snatched up the first African, brought us here against our will, is the enemy today. That's the thing that we have to understand.
Greetings, greetings, greetings. Welcome to another episode of Real Life on Foundational Radio, brought to you by Black Talk Radio Network. I am your host, Jenna Capra, alongside my partner, my co-host, Brother Roz. Tonight is February the 19th. Hope y'all are hearing this well. Here in Chattanooga, it is wet. We're getting a lot more rain than we're used to. So, and you know, down in the South, for whatever reason, when the weather get it screams, nobody can drive. So if this is going on where you're at, hopefully all of you are being safe. Tonight's show, a continuation of last week's perception versus real, real versus perception. We talked about a lot of things last week, and a lot of things have come up this week. So before we jump into anything, Brother Roz, how are you doing tonight, and where would you like to start?
Greetings to you and the other callers and listeners. Peace to Brother Scotty as well. I'm still learning. How are you doing, actually, before I move forward?
Still learning, and it's surprising more and more by the minute.
I totally understand. I totally understand. That's all I'll say about that. Where we're gonna start? I guess I'll go through the health stuff first.
Okay.
I think that'll probably be the good thing to get out the way. I think there is one particular video in the bunch that specifically deals with health. Let me go and find it. I believe it's one about chemo being a waste of money is the title, if I remember correctly. Let me scroll through and see where it is. Yeah. It's right after the Three City States video. Like, right after that is the one that says chemotherapy is a waste of money. It's really short. I think it's like maybe 2 minutes, if that.
Oh, okay. I got you.
Okay.
Doctor, can we talk about cancer a little bit? Various types out there. What are some of the things that you've seen in terms of your patients, and what some of the things that you've been able to do?
A better thing to talk about in relationship to cancer, well, I will talk about that, right? A better thing to talk about, however, is the relationship between profits and cancer in the United States. There was a study that was published, I believe it was in 1994. It was a 12-year program, 12-year study, they looked at adults who had developed cancer as an adult, not childhood cancer, but adult cancer, right? And this is the main types of cancer that we get here in the United States. They did a meta-analysis of these people all around the world who developed cancer as adults for 12 years and were treated with chemo. And they looked at the results. And they published the results in the Journal of Clinical Oncology. And the results? 97% of the time, chemotherapy does not work. 97% of the time, it doesn't work. So why is it still used? It's one reason and one reason only. Money. If you go to a medical doctor, an MD, with a sinus infection, and that doctor prescribes an antibiotic, he gets no financial kickback. Now, if he prescribes 5,000, you know, of that antibiotic in 1 month, the drug company that makes it might send him to Cancun for a conference, right? Mm-hmm. But he gets no direct remuneration. It's not with chemotherapeutic drugs, it's different. Chemotherapeutic drugs are the only classification of drugs that the prescribing doctor gets a direct cut of. So if your doctor prescribes chemotherapy for you, here's how it goes, more or less. The doctor buys it from the pharmaceutical company for $5,000, sells it to the patient for $12,000, insurance pays $9,000, and the doctor pockets the $4,000 difference. And there ought to be a law. The only reason chemotherapy is used is because doctors make money from it. Period. It doesn't work 97% of the time. If Ford Motor Company made an automobile that exploded 97% of the time, would they still be in business? No. This is the tip of the iceberg of the control that the pharmaceutical industry has on us. Most people have no idea of this at all. Now, I wrote a book. It's called The MD Emperor Has No Clothes, right? In my book, I have a bulleted list of 10 questions that every cancer patient should ask their doctor. 10 questions. I've had patients kicked out, literally, kicked out of the oncologist's office because the doctor was PO'd that the patient was asking them these questions. And these are just common sense questions. Cancer treatment in the United States, we have lost the war on cancer. We have lost the war on cancer. Why? Because cancer is not a reductionistic phenomenon. Cancer is a holistic phenomenon. And when you try to bring a reductionistic methodology like drugs and surgery to bear on a holistic phenomenon, you will completely miss the boat each and every time. You cannot do it. Medical doctors are like colorblind art critics. They can see that that's a boat. They can see the black and white outline, but they're completely blind to all of the colors and textures that make up the substance of the thing. It's no difference with cancer. The reason that people get cancer in the United States and the reason that we have completely lousy outcomes is because medical doctors are driving the research bus. When women get together and do a 5K run for breast cancer, all of that money, do you think any of that money goes to nutritional research? Do you think any of that money goes to homeopathic research or acupuncture or traditional Chinese medicine or naturopathic research? No. All of it goes to drugs and surgery, which do not work. Now, why aren't those women running for selenium? If every girl in this country took 200 micrograms of selenium, in one generation, we'd eliminate breast cancer by 82%. That's a big number. Why aren't we doing that? Because medicine in the United States is a for-profit industry, and most people are completely unaware of this, and most people bow down to the altar of MD-directed high-tech medicine at their own demise.
Hey, that runs right into one of the articles that I wanted to get into.
Well, let's get into it.
Well, this comes
if you want, we can talk about both of them together. Go ahead.
Yes, because they're one and the same. and both of them kill you. That's the only thing that he left out. But let's make sure that that's known. This comes from Explain Life. I found this today. Bill Gates will pay $12 million to Big Pharma for mandatory universal flu shot. I hadn't even had a chance to go through this article, but it caught my eye. And I'm gonna put this into the thread, but let me just go down this real quick. Microsoft founder and philanthropist warned that several pandemics could kill tens of millions in a matter of months if governments don't prepare for outbreaks. The world needs to prepare for pandemics in the same serious way it prepares for war. The real world isn't like Hollywood. The real world isn't like Hollywood. Despite what we might see in TV shows like 24 or movies like Cognizant, we don't have teams of experts ready to spring into action at the first signs of global outbreak. But we should, philanthropist Bill Gates emphasized during his Shuttock lecture for Massachusetts Medical Society today. And Gates is ready to put up $12 million to help us get there. Each year, the Massachusetts Medical Society and the New England Journal of Medicine present an event featuring panelists and speakers focused on a specific health-related topic. This year, the topic was epidemics. What better speaker than Bill Gates, whose foundation strives to combat some of the biggest threats in public health, such as HIV and malaria? During his presentation, Gates looked to the past, present, and future of our outbreak preparedness. The short version, we've come a long way, but still have a long way to go. Back in 1889, the Russian flu became the first flu pandemic to spread across continents. A few decades later, 1918 flu pandemic killed 675,000 people in just 5 weeks. Luckily for those of us alive now, today we have vaccines, drugs, and diagnostic tools that help us address outbreaks far more effectively than when those illnesses first took hold. But we still fall short in so many respects, according to Gates. He noted the wake-up calls of 2009 H1N1 virus and West Africa's more recent Ebola outbreak. The world didn't respond quickly enough in either situation. We couldn't effectively track the diseases as they spread. Our local health system simply collapsed. People keep dying because we weren't ready. The world needs to prepare for pandemics in the same serious ways it prepares for war, Gates told the audience. One way to be better prepared for the inevitable next pandemic, to develop better weapons to fight outbreaks. To that end, the Bill Gates and Melinda Gates Foundation teamed up with the families of Google co-founder and Alphabet CEO Larry Page to launch the Universal Influenza Vaccine Development Grand Challenge. According to the challenge website, the goal is to find, quote-unquote, a game-changing universal solution to address both pandemic and seasonal influenza. The World Health Organization estimates 290,000 to 650,000 people die from the latter each year. And while less common, pandemic influenzas can be even more deadly. The grand challenge is awarded 250,000 to 2 million in funding over 2 years to the most promising proposal for the universal flu vaccine. Then those projects that, quote unquote, demonstrate promising proof of concept data, such as in animal models, can apply for the full award of $10 million for additional studies. The Gates Foundation is thinking big and fast with this challenge. They're only interested in the universal flu vaccine, not one that might work to address certain strains of the flu or in certain populations, and they want to be ready for the clinical trials by 2021. We may not meet Hollywood's standard for outbreak preparedness today, but if Bill Gates has anything to say about it, we might in the very near future. And I'm gonna post that in the thread. And y'all, the same thing with what the video that Ross was just had us to check out. It's about money, and they will allow you to die dead until if you don't give it to them. What would you finna say, Ross?
Oh, no, I was agreeing with you, but it's funny that he's talking about this universal vaccine, because the only thing I could think of them doing is like what they're now coming out with as a new cancer treatment, which is to commandeer a virus and put whatever the genetic cure is for that specific illness, and then have the virus actually facilitate the destruction of the flu via the genetic material it's carrying in its nucleus, which is what they're doing with cancer too. That's the only way I can see it. Because when we had the video we played a few shows back, like a couple months ago, we had that scientist who was discussing why the flu vaccine was deadly. And what he discussed was the fact that when you get a flu vaccine, you are only immune to the specific genetic strain of the flu that they give you in that shot. And what happens is it pigeonholes your body's antibodies to strictly create antibodies for genetic strains that come from that specific strain they gave you in the flu virus. So when you encounter one that your body's never come across before, and especially if it's one that is a pandemic strain, you're completely ill-prepared for it because your body's been genetically pigeonholed into only creating antibodies for genetic mutations off of that one strain. Whereas if you are allowed to, your immune system is allowed to actually fight that disease, you build antibodies for multiple strains and pandemic strains of those multiple strains. So your body's actually better prepared to fight many different strains that you can encounter that might mutate into a pandemic versus having your antibodies pigeonholed via the flu vaccination shot. And that's not taking into account that vaccines also have mercury, which is completely toxic to every living organism and the central nervous system of humans. It has formaldehyde, which is what you actually embalm dead people with. I've seen labels with monkey blood. They labeled it cow pus, whatever that is. So, I mean, you're getting all kind of animal DNA plus these toxic, heavily toxic heavy metals and other toxic chemicals included in your vaccine shot with a bunch of other stuff. So hey, it's just go ahead.
I tell you a good thing to do when you're at the doctor, especially if you have children, ask the doctor what's in the vaccines. Just ask them straight up. And if you still trust them after they answer you, you know, there you go.
I saw a couple of days ago in the news that they're coming up with a bill that would allow parents a much easier time in having their children not partake in vaccinations, and they don't have to use a religious excuse or anything. They can just say that, you know, they as a parent are uncomfortable with the vaccine and basically reject it, and legally they would have to do so. So this was just a few days ago. I want to see if I could kind of investigate that again, but I saw it came up on my local news. And it's something I want to look into because that's actually really good. You should allow your body to fight any diseases it encounters because that's what your body's designed to do. It's a form of exercising your immune system just like you exercise a muscle. You enhance that by using things like colloidal silver, oil of oregano, four thieves oil. There's a number of them besides those that you can also incorporate that can help you boost your immune system and fight illnesses and disease. I recently didn't even get the flu. I got like the very first signs of it, and within about 48 hours, I was able to completely knock it out. I never actually got sick, and it was fine. So, and I use colloidal silver, and I use four thieves oil. I put like two drops in cups of tea that I was drinking throughout the day at work. And those two things, was a couple other little things, but those were the two main things I did. In less than 48 hours, I was good. So I just say that it's better to use things that are natural and allow your body to do what it's designed to do. Did you want to add anything to that?
No, I agree. I'm looking at some of these other articles that I want to get into.
No problem. Cause I know I had a couple of other health ones, but I know with the chemo video, I just think it's really good for people to, because you always hear about the fact that the medical industry in the United States is a business, but to have it presented by an oncologist who actually is discussing in his field the shortcomings of the system and how the medical field is really, really powerful. So that's what I think that really turns out to be good. And
yeah, we got a caller. Caller last 41491. You have a lot of background noise.
Oh, brother, I'm sorry.
Thank you.
Oh, okay. Okay. Maybe he just came through open like that. No problem. So with the chemo, it's really a business, and the business is in keeping you sick. If I implore everybody to watch a documentary, it's by Michael Moore called Capitalism, a Love Story. It specifically deals with the healthcare system of the United States in comparison to the one in Cuba and also to the one in Canada and also to the one in, I believe it's England. And you're going to see what healthcare really looks like in other countries in which people are treated like human beings, and where the opposite is true in these other countries. You get bonuses based on how many people you keep healthy in England. Mm. A doctor literally gets a bonus if his patient sees him less, because that means as a doctor, he's doing his job. He's keeping them healthy so they don't have to be in his office every month. In the United States, you make your money off of keeping them a person in your office every month. The doctor becomes a legal drug dealer. He writes a script for you every 30 days or every 90 days or every 60 days for you to get a re-up on your drug. You know, we played the video, I think it was two episodes ago, about potassium and the fact that when you take blood pressure pills, it leaches all of the electrolytes, the potassium from your blood. Potassium is what helps your body get rid of excess salt. It literally repairs and heals the cardiovascular system. It helps to keep your arteries clear. And what happens is when you take the pills, you have to drink extra water is what they tell you, because usually those blood pressure pills are also diuretic. So you end up going to urinate very, very consistently throughout the day. But each time you urinate, you're also removing all of your potassium and you're not replacing it. And potassium will naturally stabilize your blood pressure. So then you have to take extra drugs to combat the side effects of the original blood pressure pill. That's what the video discussed quite clearly. And these are all the little games that are played with your health all the time. And in America, we don't understand it, because our system has conditioned us to be lifelong illness sufferers, because all they focus on is the symptoms, not the actual cause of the problem from a holistic, you know, perspective.
From any perspective.
Pretty much, yeah, it's about money. It's really about money. And the longer they can keep you sick and keep you on drugs, the more money they're going to make off you until you go on the ground. And that's pretty much the system we're in. It's a parasitic system. But, I mean, when you look at the overarching system that America has, which is a white supremacist system, the entire system is nothing but vampirism. And that's just one of the most acute examples of vampirism, or the vampirism of the system, would be the medical system, which I call the dedicated.
Man, speaking to that same point, goes right into the theme of tonight. What's real versus perspective? You know, I was at work, man. Man, I was at work, and one of these suspected races, I got some new ones. I got a few new ones. Man, and they're just talkative.
Okay.
Just very, very talkative. But anyhow, one of them bring up the fact about Tennessee where I'm at is getting ready to propose legalized marijuana. Now, this is no shock to me, even though I seen it a couple years ago when everybody else first started talking about it. But he said he seen it a couple days ago. And the first thing come to my mind is that with all of these bodies that they pick up for marijuana, I'm not even thinking about, at this particular time, I should say, I'm not even thinking about all of the time that a lot of black men and women have gotten for marijuana charges. I started thinking about it, and I think it was just because the suspect brought it up. I started thinking about what are they going to do to replace those bodies since marijuana will be legal?
They're going to find ways to circumvent the law, because even in places where it's legal, you find that they're still picking up people, majority black folks and some white folks, for marijuana too, even though it's supposed to be legal. So to me, they're just going to find more savvy ways of using the color of law and discretion, and maybe even make up a few laws on, you know, as we move forward.
Oh, of course.
To allow them to circumvent.
That's mandatory.
Of it. Yeah, that's what I see them doing, because that's what the system does. It's like water. It always finds a path of least resistance. Whenever you see water coming down the mountainside, it always takes the path of least resistance. And that is how the system is when it comes to refining the practice of terrorism on its victims. And of course, the darker you are, the more victimized you're going to be. But it's victimizing everybody, including white folks.
Okay, just a lot of them we're going to get into that too. But we got Scotty. Because you just said white supremacy is fluid. That's crazy. But greetings, Scotty. How are you doing tonight?
Hey, I'm doing the best I can. Greetings to you and Ross and the listeners. Can you just, you know, make sure I heard you correctly, repeat what you asked about the legalization of cannabis?
Oh, well, I was saying we talk about them releasing all of the people, which they should, for these marijuana charges. But instead of thinking about this, when it came out of this suspected racist mouth today, it made me wonder, what are they going to start charging us with now? Since they want to legalize marijuana, what would be the next thing they're going to start replacing those bodies with? Since we gonna quit taking them to jail for because marijuana legal, what are we gonna intensify now to get them back in the jail anyway?
What suspected racists are you talking about?
This just a random one at work. He just sparked a thought in my head. That's all.
He
has no power or nothing. Just now, the fact that it was on his mind. That's all.
Now, for an example, you know, and this is something that, you know, the criminal advocacy, for lack of a better word, groups have been pushing for the release, because they ain't released nobody. It's still people locked up for cannabis, you know, distribution and, you know, street sales and what have you, even in the states that have legalized it. And you know, there needs to be a push to get those people released, okay? So they haven't let anybody go. Now, you know, speaking of what Ross was saying, like, for example, in Colorado, where which was one of the first states to legalize cannabis, and how long has it been legal there? Has it been 10 years yet? I'm not sure.
I think it's pushing 10 years. I think it's coming up on, or maybe just hit or past 10 years. Like, we're right around that time, I believe, if I'm correct.
Now, even in that state, they're still making arrests. Mm-hmm. But it seems that most of the people being arrested are juveniles, you know, not legally able to possess it, just like alcohol and what have you. But I still imagine that they busting people for sales and unlicensed sales and distribution. Now, the other side of that, which is why I support the legalization of all drugs, you know, which is something Law Enforcement Against Prohibition, that organization, has called for, And it's not that, you know, I want people to use crack or shoot heroin or whatnot, but prohibition ain't stopped nobody from smoking crack or using heroin, you know? And so I just feel like, you know, you might as well just legalize it and tax it and what have you. I'm not going to start shooting up heroin just cause it's legal. You know what I'm saying? But to me, you know, specifically to your question with cannabis legalization, you know, and especially if it gets legalized on a federal level, because it's still illegal federally, but they just gonna switch their focus to other drugs and other substances, in my opinion. You know, sprinkle some crack on them, like
it seems like it's fentanyl now.
So yeah, that's the new hot thing. Yeah, you're right about that.
And of course, it comes in right when marijuana is going to be legalized.
Now, one thing I wanted to say, at least for the state of New Jersey, this has been a hot ticket item in regards to the governor. He was pushing to legalize it from before he became the new governor, Phil Murphy. Now, one thing I respect is the mayor of Jersey City, Mayor Fuller, and the mayor of Newark, Ross Baraka. Both of them said they refuse to move ahead with trying to legalize anything in their cities until they correct the laws with the people already locked up. They should be immediately released. Their records should be expunged. This is what both mayors have said. Their records should be expunged. Matter of fact, now that it's legal, if they wanted to, they should be able to legally get into the market and there should be no repercussions from any previous marijuana arrest. And I applaud them for that because they don't want to move forward with anything to do with legalization in their respective cities until those issues are addressed first. They were like, once that's addressed, then, hey, we can do it. It's not a problem. You know, we have provisions in place to move forward with it, but not until you balance the scales in regards to the injustice of the people locked up in jail and still getting locked up for it, you know, prior to all of this wonderful shift in the correct direction. So, yeah. So hopefully other states do the same thing in other cities around the country. Go ahead.
Yeah. Before we got a caller, Cujo, we'll come to you in a second. I just wanted to make this known real quick. I wasn't saying that anybody had been let out. I was just, like I said, it just sparked a question. Hopefully, I ain't the only one thinking that way. And appreciate both of your answers. What's going on? How are you this evening, Cujo?
Hey, Cujo, greetings.
Hey, I'm good, man. Greetings to the callers, listeners. Thank you guys for this platform again. I think it's a great one, Jenna, that you mentioned, because in Wisconsin, I speak to somebody in Wisconsin. They also are aware that there are more jails being built in Wisconsin as we speak. In New York City, they're also trying to push for 4 new jails. Brooklyn, Bronx, Manhattan, all the different boroughs. And we all know how densely populated New York City is. But also the crime level of New York City is down more than it ever has been in 70 years. So the reasoning behind it is just there's something else. And one of the things that I think that we may miss is certain legal laws. I don't even think that they're thinking about drugs. I think they're thinking about legal things like the usage of certain patents or whatever over the airwaves or videos that people may post that they didn't get clarification for. Like I'm thinking that they're gonna have to stretch to fill these jail cells, because if you're gonna remove marijuana from that situation, then that means you're gonna have to put something in place that's equally as as used or as abused, yeah, whatever that may mean, to in place. You know, so I'm thinking it could be almost anything. You know, we could, like I said, from patents to music to videos that other companies will say, now we want to sue that person. You understand what I'm saying?
I do.
Yes, but you made me think of something, too. What you made me think of is the economic collapse is coming. And in areas where they don't have FEMA camps, the next best thing is jail. The FEMA camps are nothing but concentration camps pretty much anyway. So to me, it could be just in preparation as well in the near future when things hit the fan. You're going to have people going out and doing all kinds of things to survive because things are going to be really bad and you need a place to house those people. That could also be, and that's for the short term, but who's to say how long this is going to go when everything does hit the fan because it's going to be a global situation. So I'm pretty sure it's going to be an extended time frame of martial law and all of that type of stuff. So I think a jail situation in a densely populated place like New York would be the best situation because a FEMA camp or concentration camp wouldn't do in a city like New York. That, I could be incorrect, but that's also a thought that came into my head just listening to everything you elucidated. And what you're saying, I agree with as well. They might start, because you're seeing, matter of fact, they just had a video on YouTube like maybe a week and a half ago of a YouTuber who had his door kicked in by police. I didn't get to watch the video, but they just showed these guys in green paramilitary outfits with guns, like kicking in this guy's door. I remember there was another guy who was doing, he was like some kind of low-key rapper, and he was actually hustling drugs, and he would be on YouTube telling us his little exploits and whatnot. And while he was doing the video live, they kicked in his door and arrested him, like literally as he's talking on camera, going off, and they kicked in his door and got him. So, I mean, this is actually happening to people on YouTube, just like it has and does still happen to people on Facebook. I remember one lady on Facebook, the feds kicked in her door, and she went to jail because she was selling food via her Facebook page. And she didn't have a license, so they were like, basically, you're selling food from your house. We don't know if it's contaminated. You have no license to actually sell food. So they kicked in her door and treated her like a drug dealer selling contraband, like literally. That was a couple of years ago. So it is actually happening. But I think, like you said, it'll probably get worse in regards to what violations would trigger a response like that from the authorities, because they're all in it. Once you're on any of those sites, you're basically in Alphabet Boy water. You're just all in it, and they're seeing everything. And if you do something that they deem they don't want you doing, or they say it's illegal, they'll kick in your door. So yeah, you're absolutely correct, I think.
Look, I want to throw something good to make everybody smile real quick.
Okay.
I know y'all remember the like this lady really looked like Miss Piggy for real, and I'm not name calling. I'm just, that's the best description I can give you. But y'all remember her. She, her name is Pamela Taylor. And she said that Michelle Obama was a gorilla in heels.
Oh, yeah.
She is facing 30 years in jail for FEMA fraud.
She got the good night.
Stealing $18,000 in flood relief benefits. Whoa. So, you know, that made me smile. I wanted to spread that along with y'all. But on to the next article. In Alabama, you know, right here in Tennessee, I'm very, very close. So this always piques my interest when I see this. And this from the Times Free Press. This is my one of my favorites. I can't afford it, so I always have to catch it by happenstance. But a newspaper in Alabama calls for the reinsurgence of the KKK. They say that they need the ride again. Now, a newspaper called for this. So hopefully they'll be investigating and we'll hear more about it. If you hadn't heard about it, now you have. And believe me, if it's happening here, it's probably happening there. somebody just got mad at somebody else. Yeah, somebody got mad at somebody else and told on them. And that leads to this next one that I want to tell y'all about. In Kentucky, there was this 57-year-old white man who pulled a gun out on another 50-plus couple wearing MAGA hats and told them that today was a good day for them to die. So
I remember that.
You say what now?
I remember that. I remember I saw a news clip about it on YouTube, and I was like, whoa, this dissension amongst the colonizers is happening on the global stage, like we discussed on Candle today, in regards to like all of these European Union countries circumventing all of the United States sanctions to continue doing business with countries that the U.S. doesn't want them to. They're no longer on the same page. They're doing what's best for themselves as nations rather than going with the collective white supremacist colonialist model. And when you looked at the 1800s, they were all on the same page when they partitioned Africa. And when they were all on the same page, they were completely successful. Now they're in disarray, and some of these non-white countries that they would have been completely holistically against are gaining an advantage at being able to circumvent U.S. sanctions to still sell their oil and sell their products to the same of the other, the other Europeans rather than the United States and their cohort. So yeah, that is a, and so you're seeing this same kind of dissension on the ground with this situation. A 50-year-old colonizer goes at two other 50-something-year-old colonizers, pull the gun on them because there's a difference in perception here. And they're fighting for dominance even on the ground now. So it's very interesting.
Well, I believe about right before Trump got elected, and I can't remember if it, Scotty can correct me if I'm wrong. I believe it was Tando, but it might have been on BTR News. But I said that Trump was going to get in there and they're going to be fighting amongst themselves.
Yep, you did.
This has went from the White House all the way down to the dirt roads of Kentucky and Alabama. Mm-hmm. But you go ahead. I just wanted to throw those two articles out there real quick. I know you had a few more that we were supposed to be getting into before we got into some of these videos.
Let me see if I could just find it. Okay. So this one actually is from yahoo.com, and it says, it's entitled "Critics Call Out Billy Ray Cyrus's Weed Photo. Every single person in jail right now for smoking pot should be released." Over the weekend, Miley Cyrus shared a photo from her wedding day in which she jokingly holds up her bridal bouquet as if it's a bong. It seems the apple didn't fall from the tree. The pop star's country crooner dad, Billy Ray Cyrus, also documented his own apparent appreciation for ahem going green on social media. But that's just a blur. But what it is in the image is a giant vault. The vault looks like it's probably maybe my height, slightly taller. I'm 6 feet. And it looks like it's about 4 feet wide with about, I think, six shelves. And I counted 17, looked like at least a pound bag of weed. That's what I could see, because they had like three bags on the top and then the rest of them were in on each one of the shelves. But behind them, there's more. That's just what I was visually able to see and count. And his wife standing there just cheesing and pointing at all of this marijuana. And I'm just like, wow, the stuff that white people can do, it's so great that you can go on television, Instagram, and post a photograph with what would be considered intent to distribute, amount of marijuana with a big smile on your face, and it's all good. And you have black people sitting in jail for a roach clip. You got black people being sodomized and being, vaginally penetrated in the street because a cop says they smelled marijuana. This is what's happening to them, and Billy Ray Cyrus could do that, and it's not a problem at all. They're just, white folks chilling with their weed. Incredible. That's a part of that perception versus reality. Go ahead.
I'm looking at the picture too, and those look like 5-pound bags to me. I mean, just to give a better descriptor.
I've always seen them in bricks, so I'm not used to seeing them in bags like that. But yeah, I know what you mean. Wow. Yeah, you're right. You said that makes perfect sense. Whoa. It's just incredible to share. And it's just what you can count. It's not taking account of what's behind those bags, because those bags in the front got bags behind them. It's incredible. So, yeah. Just the difference between how we're treated versus how they get treated. Well, matter of fact, they don't get treated at all. They just, it's cool for them.
Hey,
it's incredible.
You remember I had, there's been several shows back. Mm-hmm. Excuse me. I hope I'm not coming down with nothing. There's been several shows back though, but you remember the old suspect in the TSA? He was in the airport. They treat me like a nigger.
Oh, yes, yes, I remember that. Oh man, I'm telling you, you just can't script this stuff. The system is just so incredible sometimes that it's something you just can't script. That's the only way that I could put it. My face is hurting because I'm just like laughing my behind off. The next video article I wanted to touch on was from theantimedia.com, and it's entitled "Hackers Can Turn Sex Robots into Killing Machines, Security Experts Warn." According to Nicholas Patterson, a cybersecurity lecturer at Deakin University in Melbourne, Australia, humanoid sex robots that have recently hit the market could potentially be hacked and turned into killing machines. Now, I'm not going to read anything from the article. I'm just going to give that blurb. That's the blurb. And basically what he's saying is that a hacker can actually gain control of the limbs of the robot and make it actually get up, walk around, pick up objects, use those objects to assault. And the robots, of course, are going to be way stronger than human beings are. So it's not going to be something where we can just use our quote unquote human strength to fight it off. You're talking about a machine that probably works on hydraulics in some way, or potentially does. And if that's the case, there's not going to be much you can do depending on the pounds per square inch sort of, strength and pressure it can put on you. And these things weigh over 200 pounds a piece. So for some people, it might be just heavy enough to kill them. But he's basically saying they can hack into the limbs and make the limbs do whatever they want them to do. So you really want to be careful with these new seemingly wonderful things. They're not all beneficent. And this is basically what he's saying. And he invited the set of detail into how that can be done, and we know it can be done. They can hack into your pacemaker, they can hack into your refrigerator, whatever smart anything you have can be hacked into. And if it is hacked into, then it can become a danger to you and your family, or it can become a device to eavesdrop on you and your family unbeknownst to yourself. So yeah, quite interesting article. I would say check it out. It's very, very interesting to see this expert discuss that whole scenario. The next one is, let's see, actually Scotty had posted this a couple of days ago, and I just thought it was really, really interesting here. Okay, so this is entitled Equal Opportunity Evil, A New History Reveals, and this is from Slate.com. A new history reveals that for female slaveholders, the business of human exploitation was just as profitable and brutal as it was for men. So I'm not going to read the whole thing. I'm just going to read a brief section of it, like maybe two paragraphs, I believe. So it's these assumptions about female slave owning as a kind of passive, half-hearted practice that Jones Rogers is challenging with her book, and with them the idea that white women were innocent bystanders to the white male practice of enslavement. Her goal, she told me in a phone interview, was to paint a picture of the way white women economically benefited from their own slaveholding. For some women, slaveholding helped them attract husbands. Within their marriages, a woman like Martha Gibbs, who owned enslaved people, might retain a measure of independence by maintaining control of quote unquote her slaves. And if those husbands died or turned out to be failures at business, their wives figured out ways to retain the human property that would ensure their continued material security. Jones Rogers began this shift in historical perspective by looking away from letters and diaries of elite white women that formed the documentary basis for earlier histories and toward the testimony of the people who had been in bondage. Looking at life narratives of formerly enslaved people recorded during the Great Depression by the Works Progress Administration, Jones Rogers found multiple instances of these witnesses naming the women who owned them, not simply as mistresses, quote unquote, but as owners, with everything that that entailed. She found stories of times when these women, quote unquote, reinforced their property claims in conversations with or in the presence of their slaves, unquote, and, quote, challenged their male kinfolk alleged power to control their property, human or otherwise, unquote. So I'll stop there, but it's just saying that, white women who owned slaves were extremely powerful and shrewd. They did not give up any of their authority to even their husbands, and they actually kept their slave business separate from their husbands. So if their husband was a failure and wasn't good at business, she made sure that she would always be straight financially by the way she dealt with her slaves. Further on in the article, it goes into some of the brutality they exhibited on their slaves, and they were no less brutal and ruthless as their male counterparts. In regards to making sure that the slaves stayed in line, the stories are there in the article. Actually, I just ordered the book just so I can check it out, because it's very, very interesting just to get that perspective, because even today, a lot of our people just are under the assumption that the problem is the white male, and that, like she said, the white female is pretty much innocent and passive, when we've talked about on this program and other ones, people have talked about some of the horrific things that white women have done to black people right now, you know, whether it's a black male or black female. So it's just kind of further giving the history of what we see happening today, and the fact that it's basically always been that way. It's just something that propaganda and just the way that we're taught in this country kind of shapes the narrative in a way in which things don't look like what they really are, unless you really study those things or come across that information and decide to partake of it. So this is, I think, a very important article, and I think it's an important book just to give a holistic picture of the slavery experience, especially from the mouths of those who were owned by women, so they can actually tell you, this is what my experience was with, you know, Miss So-and-so who owned me and my family, or whatever the case may be. So, yeah, very, very powerful article, and I appreciate Sadie for posting it, because I just think it's quite important just to get that historical perspective and make those connections to people who may not know it. And it just might give you more insight into your own codification in regards to doing things to be preventative moving forward. So let me see.
Did nobody build more monuments to slavery than the Daughters of the Confederate, did they?
You're absolutely correct. And hey, 53% of white women voted for Donald Trump.
Hey.
So
limitless would you finna say something, Ross?
Oh, I thought somebody else was speaking. I'm not looking at the board right now.
Yeah, that was me, man. I just really agree with that. I think that that's one of the biggest problems we have. I speak to so many other non-white males, you know, downtown Brooklyn, walking around and just randomly speaking to brothers that are on the corner selling books, selling herbs. And I ask them a simple question. I say, who's more confused, black men or black women? All of them say black women. All of them. And the simple fact is that exactly what you just said is that they don't see the image of the white female as being oppressive because it's a female. They figure that because they have the same genitalia that they're fighting the same battles. But how are you fighting the same battles with a woman that's the second most powerful woman in the whole country? Sorry, the most powerful woman in the country. It makes no sense. So if you really think about it, if racism were to stop, if white racism, white supremacy, if they really wanted to stop it, white women could have stopped it a long time ago by just crossing their legs, period.
Oh.
So it's interesting hearing that, man. It's interesting hearing that, because that's Dr. Curry's Man Not, another book that should be plugged in for that too, man. you know. Yeah. But I'll mute my line. Thank you, man.
No worries. Thank you. We're finna come right to you, Scotty. Wanted to mention that for those of you who didn't know what Ross was talking about as far as the sex bots and all of this, you also have other bots like the little toy bears and things of that nature. There was a TV show called Limitless. Not going to go into the details, but they detailed this exact same scenario to where sometimes it may not even be the machine itself, but seems like this stuff is being pushed and then it's appearing. But what's going on, Brother Scotty? Your mic is open, of course.
Yeah, I wanted to comment on that story that Ross shared that I had posted to BTR community. And it's a black female professor who wrote that. She actually has a book. I can't recall the name of the book, although it may be mentioned in that article. And, you know, I found other articles that was talking about, you know, her work and her research in this area. And, you know, it was pretty eye-opening, you know, and you know, history, I should say his story has always been that, oh, you know, the white woman was the hapless victim and, you know, she was under the control of white males. But I mean, reading that article opened up my eyes to so much more. And they were like a lot of them women were inheriting, you know, victims of slavery as well as property, plantations and whatnot from their fathers. And they were complaining that the men that they had married was like blowing all their money and didn't really, you know how to manage business and whatnot. So, you know, but then also, you know, tomorrow is the day that Frederick Douglass died, and he fell out with white feminists because after the Civil War, there was a big push to get black males the right to vote and what have you. And these white women wanted him to attach, you know, women's suffrage to it, and he wouldn't, because he was like, if I do that, then, you know, it's just going to doom, you know, the black male getting a vote. It wasn't that he was against them getting a vote. It was just that at that particular time and moment, he knew that it was tough going sledding to try to even get black males the right to vote, let alone a female, regardless of her color. So he was looking at it, you know, politically from a strategic way. Man, they called him all kind of racist names and what have you. I was just reading about that yesterday. But
yeah, you posted a great article on that with him making up with Susan B. Anthony the day that he passed. Yeah. Which is crazy. Yeah.
Yeah.
Man, thanks for that too. Powerful, Scotty. Powerful article. Go ahead.
Yeah. And so, you know, and that brings me to something else. You know, I keep hearing these politicians talking about the woman, and the white woman is the face of it. That's who we know they talking about. And these black women need to understand that when they talk about equal pay for women, they talking about white women.
White women.
Okay. Absolutely. And like, you know, Kamala Harris was tweeting out, you know, that kind of rhetoric and whatnot, just saying a woman and what have you. And I was like, okay, I'm a black man. Who's speaking for me? And I looked up the data and I found a chart that shows that black men and black women, we black men just get paid a little bit more. They make something like 92 cents on the dollar, almost equal pay between black people, you know, black women and black males. But who's above all of us? The white woman. So who's speaking for me? You know, and these women, you know, these black women need to recognize that they part of our family, not that family. Because that white woman, while she may not be getting the same pay as that white male, well, who is she paid? Who is she married to? So that money's still coming into their household.
Scotty, I gotta jump in on that, man. I feel what you're saying. And that's a lot of it is them being more white identified. You know, I think it's either one of the two. It's either they're white identified or they actually know the deal and they don't care anymore. You understand what I'm saying? Because they're trying to get over and do what they got to do to survive. BGQ. I'm not going to judge on it, but the reality is if they do something that's detrimental and harmful to us in our own personal circles, not on social media, we should call it out in our own personal circles so that we are aware of it and we know what it is and we could follow code. Because right now, even with let's go back last year until the non-white female that classifies herself as biracial got married to that prince. A lot of black women were pro for that. They were supportive. They were happy about it. But you talking about, and this is where historical context coming in, you talking about a family, a so-called royal family that is committed genocide across the globe, and they have not done any kind of retribution, nothing to make up for what they have. They have maintained their riches. They, matter of fact, let's keep it even basic. We don't even got to talk about that. There's not even one black servant in their household, in that court. And that's the only black woman that's going to be in there? And you're celebrating that? That's how twisted the mentality of, quote unquote, our non-black women are. Like, they don't even understand that dynamic of it. And the fact that black women were celebrating that drew a supreme worry to me, because it's another red flag that we got a lot of work to do. We got a lot of work to do. We can't get around it.
Oh, you are live on Real Life, the radio show with myself, Ross, and my co-host, Jenna Kepler, on Foundation Radio via Black Talk Radio Network. If you wish to comment or ask a question, give us a call at 704-802-5056. Again, that's 704-802-5056. Press star if you wish to ask a question or make a comment. And please watch the background noise. Thanks for being with us this week.
Some great points. We're going to get right down to the thick of it, and we're going to start off where y'all left off.
Hey, I wanted to chime in because there's an article that kind of ties into this too that I posted like maybe 2 days ago. And this one was from Medium.com, and it's about a black woman who has 5 children who attended a football mom sleepover with 7 white women and 3 white men at a home in Forsyth County, Georgia, and ended up found beaten to death, face down by the next morning. So I'm just going to read 2 paragraphs that I actually copy-pasted. It says here, unanswered questions surround the mysterious death of a black mother of 5 who was found beaten to death after her attending a quote-unquote football mom sleepover with 7 white women and 3 men at a home in Forsyth County, Georgia, town where Horsford 40 of Cumming, Georgia, was found face down in the yard after she attended a football mom sleepover on November 4th. Horsford was severely beaten head and face. Her body was in the yard by the homeowner's aunt at 7:30 a.m. Someone in the home called 911 to report Horsford's death at 9:30 a.m., 2 hours after the body was found. And it says it doesn't stop there. Apparently, one of the men in attendance was a former pretrial officer by the name of Jose Barrera. Barrera was recently terminated from his position as a pretrial officer for the Forsyth County Court after he accessed the personal information of 5 people from his work terminal. It was brought to light when a Cumming, Georgia woman filed a complaint about Barrera accessing and disseminating her personal information to others. So she went to this sleepover thinking everything was going to be fine, and didn't make it till the next morning and was found beaten to death. And therein, again, just a healthy suspicion of white folk. And she had some beautiful, she was a beautiful woman too. They had a picture of her that she's just a really, really gorgeous black woman. Five beautiful black children, both boys and girls. And they have no mom now. And, you know, she just was in a much less than optimal situation, I would say. And again, it's just that lack of understanding of our position and the fact that we're still in a situation where, you know, white folks kill us and they still get away with it. There's always a viable excuse, or not always, but on a lot of occasions, there's always a viable excuse as to why they end up killing us. And either that or they'll say, oh, this person was mentally ill. That's been the thing for forever now, is that the person was mentally ill, they snapped, they lost it. They need, you know, like Paul Mooney said, we need to study this. Like that's the approach they take. And black people, we don't, you know, we go to jail for a roach in the car. So it's just sad. It's really, really, it's a sad story. But again, it's just not really understanding the world that we're in, the system we're in, and the people who pretty much dominate our daily reality in ways that a lot of us really don't comprehend until it's sadly sometimes too late. But yeah, I thought that was an important article because this wasn't a child. This wasn't like a high school age child, because we have stories of that happening with, you know, high school and college age children too. This was an adult mom with four children who, same way as the tragic stories with younger folks, have turned out, you know, with a similar scenario, just that she was an actual adult with children of her own and made a similar mistake. So it's just to kind of show age doesn't really matter. When you don't understand the system you're in, you can be of any age and potentially end up in a fatal situation because you're just not aware, or you're not thinking ahead enough if you're not really understanding racism, white supremacy like that, to really not put yourself in those scenarios. So I just thought that was quite important. Did you want to chime in on that, Jenna?
Yeah, I was. That was quite a bit, especially with the grown woman, like you said. And they have killed grown women, grown men, young women and children, young boys. I mean, the question is when is somebody really going to do something? And I don't mean as far as like a race war, nothing that I would promote first and foremost, because I don't believe that we're ready. And I hate to hear people talk like that, because more times than not, the people that do talk like that, even if they are ready, they're just leading whoever following them either to a good time spent in jail or prison, or murdered themselves, just not thinking things out. What I mean is that people who report these things, as far as like the videotape, not the videotape, but the camcorder on the phone. We see these things all the time, and they men, women, whoever. It could be a whole group of a whole group of teenagers, two or three, 25 or older men, just standing around videotaping, watching one of our sisters or one of our brothers get beat down. And it don't even have to be the police, and they still just watch. Like it's none of that was even possible when I was growing up. If you would get caught doing something, if you would get caught watching and somebody you went to, whatever place you went to, got into a fight, they didn't even have to get jumped. But if y'all didn't jump them because you stood there, you had the answer for that. And I understand the laws, and I haven't heard one person say that yet, though. The reason why they didn't go in and stop was because of the law. They always say something funny like, it was none of my business. this is one of those real versus perceptions that I'm talking about. Understand that some people get woofed up because they see other black people around and possibly put themselves in predicaments that didn't even need to happen, under the assumption or the perception that because there was a few more black people around that they could do that. Just things like that, I think we need to be weary of. Brother Cujo had mentioned earlier in the program about a code. For maybe a year, I know I mentioned what would be our code. I said that every week for about a year. Nobody ever really had an answer. I think the only real answer to that is that we won't have a code. You can only adjust yourself in these situations based off of what you will do, not what we will do. Because if you're waiting for we, you will get yourself murdered. And we've seen that time and time again. I just seen a video a couple of days ago in Louisiana. It might have been today. I've been working too much, but I can't afford to stop. Anyhow, that has nothing to do with this. Anyway, it might have been today. A young man had the bus. He had the local transportation stop. Like, the door kept trying to close, and he was holding it open while this young sister, who was thought to be stealing. It didn't mention if she had stole anything out of the store, what have you, but he watched this racist white man just stomp her in the head twice. And on the video, had the nerve to say, "If he do it again, I'm gonna get him." It's like, man. And that's the mentality. You know, just like that guy that used to get bullied. He was like, "Hit me one more time and watch, I'm going to do something. Hit me again and see if..." That's what we have collectively. Yeah. I mean, from the outside looking in, that's what we have collectively become.
I've called it psychosocial conditioning towards apathy. What happens is they condition you to pull out your...
No. I have to disagree, Roz. Because you said towards Africans. Because we have all the frustration in the world towards Africans.
No, apathy. A-P-A-T-H-Y. Oh, okay. Apathy. Yeah, not Africans. Apathy, meaning not doing anything. Like what you do is you put the camera between yourself and the event, and it kind of makes you a voyeur now rather than a participant. The mindset changes due to viewing the event through this camera. So then you no longer take action. You're just a voyeur filming an event.
Well, hold on.
That's the psychology. Go ahead.
Hold on before you finish that. Because you saying that they're voyeurs, but a lot of the explanation is that when, and I don't mean to laugh at this because it's not funny, but when somebody's getting beat down and asking for help, they are saying, "Don't worry, I'm videotaping it." Seems...
Yeah. I'm not saying that the person who's videotaping isn't scared, or they might not use that camera as an excuse to not do anything. That's definitely something that plays into it. But there's also a psychological shift when there's a camera between a person and something that they're filming. There is a psychological shift. Even cameramen talk about that. Sometimes they'll be filming, let's say, a buffalo chasing a lion away on the savannah, and then the lion's out of the frame because he's running for his life, and the bull is coming at the cameraman, and he is not actually realizing that the bull is actually coming at him until it's almost too late, because he has to actually then remove himself from the voyeur position to, like, wait a minute, I'm actually in the line of fire now. And there is a shift that happens with that, is what I'm saying. But also you have that, because, I mean, they even had, on a couple of occasions, they had women who were raped in public, and people posted the rape to Facebook Live, and no one did anything about it. So, I mean, this is a part of what the whole the dehumanization process of becoming transhuman. And when I say that, I mean in the sense that, like, I just saw a video like 2 days ago, which was really, really powerful. It discussed the fact that we are no longer human. We're actually cyborgs. And what makes us cyborgs is our phone. The fact that we live through our phones. Our phone is a digital version of us. So we are connected to our phones, attached to our phones, as if it is a physical part of our person. And that is what makes us transhuman. We may not have chips in our bodies and may not connect to machines like the Matrix, but we are actually connected to our phone. And via our phones, it
has changed avatars.
Everything about it, including our social skills. Go ahead.
I said, yeah, and having an avatar within that phone to make transactions mm-hmm. and, yeah, all of that. And it's going to get worse with VR. But that's another show. Next subject I wanted to touch on, and I'm glad Brother Scott is here. For those of you who check out our show live, you get the playback, and not just our show, but all the shows on Black Talk Radio Network. One of my mm-hmm. favorites, the Cows, Tando. Man, with all of this stuff, and I wanted to speak some more on the Gucci thing too. So, but with all of that going on, blackface, and it's so much pump and hype and just enthusiasm about supporting black-owned businesses. And I'm just wondering, can some of you who have been just receiving information, sometimes jokes, real-life situations, just general wisdom on ways to conduct your life by way of other people's mistakes, I don't understand how you could have something so precious at your hands and not be willing to help it develop. It's not like you don't know. And we support what we want. I mean, let's be honest. All of us gonna do what we want. So should it be free to you? Is that what this statement is that's being made? Is that it should be free? Or should it cost more? I'm not really sure. And if I'm losing you on what I'm talking about, I'm talking about the support for Black Talk Radio Network. There have been several notifications about what's going on with Black Talk Radio Network. And I don't know. I just don't understand. It's kind of like this show right here tonight that we're doing. This is being taken care of by me and Brother Roz to be on here, to have these discussions, to point out different aspects of the propaganda that you might not see, or maybe just a different view from what's being shown to you. And at some point in time, it really gets rough, especially dealing with real life, not the radio show, but real life itself. Me, myself, having 5 children, Brother Rise with his situation, and every other host that come here to Black Talk Radio Network to be able to provide what they believe is a solution to some of the problems that we face on a day-to-day basis, locally and globally. If Brother Scotty would like to discuss some of that as far as what you was looking for, Brother Scotty, that'd be more than welcomed.
Absolutely.
Yeah, thank you for mentioning that. And while, you know, I haven't put out an official statement, we are about to launch a membership drive. Black Talk Radio Network, of course, is supported by our nonprofit, Black Talk Media Project. Been around for 11 years now. In November, it'll be, hopefully, if we're around in November, it'll be 12 years. But it's been a struggle. It's been a struggle financially. The cost associated with managing your own server, managing the platform, you know, the costs fluctuate depending upon how many people use it. And over those 11 years, man, we've reached millions of people globally. You know, I can't speak to the other radio stations, but I'm sure it's true with them as to the station that I manage. You know, we're reaching over 180 countries globally. Wow. And I like to think this is Black people, you know what I'm saying? But of course, anybody can listen. But it's just been a struggle, man, and I'm at my wit's end. And so we're launching a membership drive of 1,000 members who have contributed $24 a year. That's not much. That's 50 cents a week. That's not much. I think that's not asking for a lot. You know, that's a very modest budget. And if I had a $24,000 a year budget, I could do a whole lot more to raise the profile of the network, which means raising the profile of everybody associated with it. So, you know, that's way below market price for you know, because if you look at media now, a lot of media is being placed behind paywalls. You know, yeah. Wall Street, Washington Post, you can only view 10 articles a month for free. Mm-hmm. Then you got to pay, you know. Same with some of my local newspapers. I'll get so many free articles, and then after that, I will have to pay. And so, you know, I don't want to put Black Talk Radio Network behind a paywall, because some people that need this information may not have the ability to pay. But I'm sure that there is at least 1,000 people out there who can contribute $24 a year. Now, you wouldn't just be contributing $24 a year. You will also have the option to become a publisher on the platform, whether that's podcasting, whether that's video. And even if you're on YouTube or another network, you don't have to leave. You can just import your stuff in our platform like you export it out to like iTunes and other platforms. You do all that here. And it's not even going to cost 0.1% of what you pay in some of these other platforms. Okay. So that's my last ditch effort to try to save it, you know, in addition to being able to become a publisher. And again, you don't have to publish anything. You can still just sit back and listen, you know, but we need those contributions. But you also get access to the social media community that many people told me we need our own. You know, when Facebook was kicking Black folks off and Twitter was banning Black folks for talking about certain things and what have you, people were saying, hey, we need our own social media platform. I heard that. I did the research. I found out the software only cost $300. People contributed. Now we had this platform. But, you know, our donations have gone down. I still refuse to solicit money via grants and stuff from these big foundations, because I'm no dummy. I know the strings come attached, and that's just giving them a opportunity to control my message by getting me addicted to a certain level of income. And I know I want this to be the people's network. And if it's going to be the people's network, the people going to have to keep it alive. So, you know, probably next month will be the official launch, but you can sign up now. But I've determined that we need at least 1,000, you know, members at just $24 a year. Thanks for allowing me to share that.
Oh, no.
No problem. Thank you. We appreciate it. Just to kind of piggyback off of what Scotty's saying, the truth is this. We don't have outlets for much of anything. Just about almost every Black bookstore in the country is closed. When I was young, there were quite a few, actually, in Brooklyn and in some of the other boroughs growing up. And there were quite a few across the country. And there was a purposeful destruction of our network of bookstores where people could get information by about themselves by our own people, us telling our own story rather than always seeking the colonizers' work to validate who we are or actually tell us who we are. And when you look at these sorts of outlets, the importance of it is the fact that it is something being brought to you by one of your own people that is actually not stifled by corporatization. Everything that Black people have had that has become corporatized destroyed everything Black people had. When you study the history of the NBA, we had our own basketball association, and it was bigger than the white people's platform. Matter of fact, a lot of white people used to come to the Black NBA games and whatnot because they were way more exciting than watching white boys play. They convinced Black people to leave our stuff behind and join their NBA, and we get mistreated all the time. We know all the stories. We know all the LeBron protests and everybody else who has something to say from the NBA about how they're treated. But we had our own stuff. We had our own baseball league. Same thing happened. We, like everything we have, we somehow are convinced that when the colonizer is interested in it or they show interest, corporate interest, that is, it's going to make it so much more wonderful. We believe we're going to reach way more people. This is what's presented to us as the benefit. And then when we go in, you're going into a system you no longer control. They commoditize something that you created, something that you were the origin of. And they make all the money, and then you get a contract. And a contract is nothing but a deal of exploitation. And the person who signs the contract basically sets the level of their exploitation based on what's on that piece of paper if they choose to sign it without having it modified correctly to their specifications and tape.
Hey, Ross.
Yes, sir.
I'm glad you mentioned the monetization because I left that out. You know, I bought some software that allows us to post, you know, video ads, image ads, text ads and stuff, and it rotate on the pages and what have you. You can even, if you, let's say you got Google AdSense, you can post your code using this software that's in built into the platform. And so I also included that, hey, if you get some sponsors, local sponsors, whatever, if you got Google Ads, you can monetize the content that you create on Black Talk Radio Network, and that's yours 100% to keep. I believe that we'd be the first network of its kind to allow people to monetize their own content and not and keep 100% of the proceeds. Okay, so you know that's another thing that I forgot to mention. Thank you.
No, I'm glad you did it.
Well,
thanks
hold on,
for that because
Ross. We go ahead. Don't take us. We got this quick break. You are listening to Real Life, the radio show, which I am your host, Jenna Kepra, here every Tuesday night at 9 p.m. Eastern Standard Time. If you have a question or comment, by all means, give us a call. That number is 704-802-5056. Press star to put yourself in the queue, and we'll be right with you as soon as possible. Go ahead, Roz. My apologies. Get this break out the way.
Oh, no problem. Yeah, I was just saying that anytime that they get to corporatize and monetize it, that's the destruction of our autonomy and our ability to speak for ourselves. And that's what Scotty's been avoiding for the last 11 years, is having that leash put around you by the colonizer telling you what you can say, how you can say it, and everything, because that's exactly what happens. When you look at what happened with hip-hop music, that's exactly what happened to it. It became a corporate fodder, and it was no longer constructive music on a holistic level. It was more destructive, and we see the results of that right now. So the whole idea is to avoid that and have the freedom of the ability to say what we need to say, to tell the truth to our people and bring what they need, not what they want to hear. And the whole idea behind it is that you have to pay it forward. People are putting their time, their energy, their life force behind bringing this content to you, having an open platform like BTR Community the now all of these other benefits are being presented, hopefully so that we can get the people that we need to help facilitate keeping the platform alive. And I mean, if you get anything out of it, then you should be able to contribute something as little as 50 cents a week. I mean, come on, that's just incredible. Like $24 a year, one time in the year. And the crazy part is when you look at the Gucci scandal and all of this stuff, we're willing to spend thousands of dollars out of pocket for a handbag or a pair of jeans or a blouse or a shirt or a tie or a belt.
Oh, you can't forget them sneakers, though.
Oh, the sneakers, forget it. So, you know, we're willing to do that just to get a white person's initial or their name on our backside or on whatever that we're wearing. And these people do not want us wearing their products. They are extremely racist, and we're just giving away all of our financial currency to literally our enemies. And then we wonder why we get abused like we do. We do because we will get treated how we allow others to treat you. If you are literally paying someone to spit in your face, call you the N-word, and just disrespect you utterly every chance they get publicly. Now, Burberry just was caught. I posted the article earlier today
with
a hoodie that had a noose. A noose for the strings on the hoodie was in the form of a noose. I mean, like, come on now. Like, how much disrespect can you actually take as a collective group of people while we're arguing about all of these other things? And now the new argument is American descendants of slavery against immigrant Africans, whether they're from the Caribbean or the continent or wherever else they're coming from. That's the new argument, while we're utterly paying people to disrespect us on the highest level possible. And we're just crabs in a barrel, fighting amongst ourselves at the bottom of the slave ship. It's just really, really sad that they're so successful at conditioning us to just utterly hate what we see in the mirror and disrespect what we see in the mirror. It's actually just quite horrific when you think about it.
Yeah.
Go ahead.
I have been, and you know, everybody else might know, but I have been going through this in my head last week. I had me and you was talking, and me and you was talking about this Gucci thing, and I kept saying, man, it's something else. It's something else. Because this happens all the time. You was like, yeah, it's a barometer. And then, like you said, Burberry come out and they do the same thing.
Yeah.
Remember, Gucci wasn't the first one of this current wave of, mistress, I guess. That's what we'll call it, since that's where it comes from. This current wave of mistress. So we see this all the time. Like you said, it's the only thing that I have come to find as far as what's coming in all of these different scenarios, even back to Tommy Hilfiger. I believe that's the one that I remember first because of my age,
Me too, of course.
So that would be the one in my lifetime that happened while I was living that I was aware of. And the only thing that was coming with all of these is that we started fighting each other. That's the only common thing. Whether we talking about the football with Kaepernick, you know, he won his suit and he got his money. You know, so that's awesome that he did win. But this whole thing went from police brutality to him hating the flag and black people versus the NFL. And we left police brutality. Not all of us, of course, got to be mindful how I speak my words. Not every black person, but a large majority stopped even mentioning him kneeling because of police brutality. It was just we boycotting the NFL. And then we start learning more about the flag and the anthem. And then children start catching on. But the longer it went on, the further away from police brutality it became. Now, the NFL has made a lot of money throughout that time. Nike jersey sales, all of these things done went up since he started his stance. And I don't see anything different happening with the Gucci and the Prada, the Burberry, because there has been a standard that it seems, and I'm sure one of you gentlemen or somebody listening live will call in and let me know if I'm wrong, is that they get a bigger kick, whether it be from other black people who like, man, I don't care nothing about that, I'm going to go get some anyway, or these suspects who are like, you know what, I'm glad they did that. Yeah, that's what you tell them. Let me go get me some now. So it's always this. And another thing it made me think about too, and then I'll let you go ahead, Roz, was Nelly Fuller popped up in my brain when this happened also while I was thinking about this. A state of confusion. That's exactly what this has created. We was already into it with each other beforehand. And I think about a year ago, me and you was talking live on Air Rise, and I said the main screen will be talking about being conscious and what have you. Now that's done started. And it has also become an identifier for them to mark you as a particular group, starting off with the Hebrew Israelites. Just things to think about. You can go ahead though, Ross.
Yeah, just to continue with the theme, there was a Twitter post that Russell Simmons wrote that I thought was extremely powerful, and it deals with clothing designers and how they corporately systematically destroyed all of the black clothing designers. It's a short little tweet he wrote, but I think he gives the shortest, direct, straight to the point understanding of how it happened. And I'm going to get into that before we try and get into another aspect of what we're talking about before we close out. So it says here, I spent many years in the fashion industry. I helped redefine it. We created a billion-dollar grossing company with Fat Farm and Baby Fat. I'm proud to say that I helped some hip-hop entrepreneurs and their companies follow suit, like Rockaware, Apple Bottoms, and many others. I found them their partners and mentored them during their launches. One day, Macy's began buying all of our top brands. We thought it was a breakthrough or a quote-unquote good sign, being accepted by our oppressor who hated and looked down on us. But then they discounted us all and intentionally killed all of the black businesses that we fed. Thousands of shops, billions of gross dollars going to the independent, mostly black shop owners. There were thousands of young black and white kids in fashion looking up to Damon, John, Sean, John, Kimora, and all of the other young black designers. White kids were buying our brands as well. They were all studying their fashion and building hundreds of companies that were distributed by the shop owners that were in biz because of us and supporting us long before Macy's bought and discounted the top 15 designers. It was intentional, deliberate, and incredibly effective. They killed that fashion revolution. This is all in caps. I grew up and lost a taste for the clothes that were basically cheap to make but too expensive for my brothers. They were defining me as a small man needing a quote-unquote status symbol. I realized that it was embarrassing to wear them, and my community members couldn't afford them. And then I didn't need them either. When are we going to wake up and take off the horrible dead animal shit and shiny crap and realize where the true shine lives? And let's instead focus on the things that serve our community and really bring us happiness. Fuck the fashion industry and the elitist, backwards, and hurtful mentality that it represents. When you wake up and realize that it's not what's on you, but what's in you that defines you, you will let go of a sickness that separates you from your brothers and sisters and ultimately separates you from God's grace. I think it's really powerful because he's basically saying they bought these people out, then discounted all of their brands until they made no money and were forced to close their doors. And this was all of those labels that he named. WooWear, Add Them in the Mix, all of them, it happened to systematically, because that's what the nature of the system is. It's parasitic. And we think that once we do get that quote-unquote acceptance from our colonizer, in whatever form they come to us and whatever, you know, wonderful lines they feed us to give us the impression that we're going to, you know, do well by connecting our business ventures with theirs, we always fall for it. And then when we do so, we end up paying for it in the sense that they just vampire your business till it doesn't exist. And this is the model that they've used for a very long time. And we still haven't learned from it yet.
Man.
And thus, the Gucci thing still continues. Go ahead.
Man, you are so right. Same model, different time. That's the only difference. And what I can't figure out is that because learning our history, what really happened, sometimes in situations like these, I believe we lean too much into that. It's almost as if people, when they respond to these things, they have to go back and look and see how they was being respond to in the previous time.
Mm-hmm.
It's almost like a child that continuously do something wrong when they're little and then make the same mistakes when they're grown. When are we going to hold ourselves accountable for what we're doing? Because if we ain't doing nothing against it, then we're participating. I know I participated for quite some time doing incredibly stupid stuff. When I figured that out, and truth be told, when I wanted to change, I guess that would be the more correct statement. When I wanted to do something different, I did it. And this scenario is no different. This scenario is no different. Just like the issue with Black Talk Radio Network. Those that want to keep Black Talk Radio on, they'll come and they'll support. But if you just want to talk about it, or you want to tune in to hear how somebody got dominated on whatever particular day, then you know that's a different mindset. Their agenda is different. And that goes back to what we was talking about with the camera. Some people just want to see you suffer. And they'll talk great to you all the time. It's just in comparison, the old white lady that used to follow Muhammad Ali around to all of his fights.
Mm-hmm.
And he seen her all the time. And he decided to go speak to her because he see her all the time at all his fights. And she was just following him around, spending her money to go see him get knocked out, hopefully, one day. Mm-hmm. The only reason why she was coming to the fights. And we have that same thing in our quote-unquote black community. You see it in the YouTube comments. You see it in some of the YouTube videos. It has become a number one view snatcher. You know, if you got two brothers or two sisters or a brother and a sister and vice versa on that arguing, people watch that all day.
Yeah.
You know, so in the views that those videos hold, that's a form of data also. That's also a barometer of what we can use to keep their attention. If we throw this up here, then we at least got them for X amount of time. And, you know, and that's being able to look at things from that point of view is another thing that comes with joining into BTR community. Access to the videos of how to read these gauges, produce content. Like, it's simple things that we could do just within our own homes. And we just don't do it. That's the fact of the matter right there. We just don't do it. We would much rather see somebody else suffer. Because we're suffering, we hoping that they suffering a little bit more. I'm not going to do nothing to stop my suffering. I just hope that your suffering is a little worse so I can feel a little bit better. That's how I feel. That's what I see when I look at the canvas of whether we're talking about YouTube, social media Facebook, Twitter, all of these things. That's the exact same thing across all of the platforms.
You know, because I think we might end up having to extend this conversation because there's some videos that I wasn't able to get into, but I think it's necessary. But to go further into this particular part of the discussion, there's a quote from Booker T. Washington I put in the thread, and I want to read it because I think it's extremely important and it speaks directly to what you were talking about and we're talking about at this time. It says, in 1911, Booker T. Washington wrote, quote, "There is a class of colored people who make a business of keeping the troubles, the wrongs, and the hardships of the Negro race before the public. Having learned that they are able to make a living out of their troubles, they have grown into the settled habit of advertising their wrongs, partly because they want sympathy and partly because it pays. Some of these people do not want the Negro to lose his grievances because they do not want to lose their jobs," unquote. So what he's speaking to are people who, I've said this before, we make a religion out of our suffering. You have, the brother from T. West, from Afro Synergy News, he calls it white supremacy hustlers. And it's people, and Scotty's talked about that too before. Some of our people have made hustling racism their business. And it's not because they're trying to help bring any information to folks. It's not because they're trying to help people expand their consciousness and maybe develop a code that may protect themselves and their children from abuse and terrorism. That's not the purpose. It's because they can monetize it. And if we were to solve our problems, they would be out of a job because that's all they focus on. Every time they go on the air or they do whatever they do, whether it's YouTube, whatever platform they use, it's always about some horrific issue relating to racism, and is presented in a way that stokes emotions and draws a lot of attention. And then what they tell you is, go to my website and buy this. I got this. I got that for sale. Buy that. Buy that. And it's really to get you to buy what they're selling. It's not really about, you know, the actual act of racism, except to get the attention and to stoke your emotions so that they can hustle you some of their products that they're selling. And it's just a mentality that we have to really be careful with, because it means that a person has not so good character, and a person that doesn't have good character is capable of almost anything. It even ties in, and before we close out, I just want to say what's going on with the American descendants of slavery situation, I completely agree that and I think this is the way that the guy from Advise News put it, Phil Scott. He said that he completely agrees that Black people in America should have their own specific category in terms of getting the assistance they need based on their unique experience of that particular group in the founding of this nation and the creation and building of this nation. That is an absolute must happen, and it should happen everywhere Black people are found where they've been kidnapped and their ancestors boarded slaves to whatever place that they ended up. You should go to the people who enslaved your people and fight for whatever's due you based on what you contributed to the founding of whatever nation those are. Now, some of the American descendants of slavery movement have now made this the new anti-Black, anti-African, non-American African bandwagon to hop on now, where immigrants, Black immigrants, are now seen as a problem. They're seen as coming here and taking their jobs and taking their money. And what's not being discussed is the fact that you have immigrants leaving a country in a lot of cases that where their country is put in their impoverished situation either by the United States or one of the United States' cohorts. So they're coming to the United States trying to do better. They're walking into a system that is controlled by the same people who impoverished the land they came from. And these people dictate to them how they're to function in the country. So any benefits that these immigrant groups get are benefits being given to them by the people in control. They're not coming here looking to take anything. They're getting what's being given to them by the people in control. And I'll explain it because it's the same thing that happened in Trinidad and Tobago. When slavery ended in Trinidad and Tobago, they did not want, because Africans at that point were the highest percentage of people in the country. So politically, Black people had all the power. And they did not want that once they realized, once they freed the slaves and realized that their numbers were so imbalanced. What they did was they brought indentured servants from China and indentured servants from India to offset the numbers of the Africans. So today you have pretty much, I think it's like 39% African, 40% East Indian, and like 10% everybody else. And the bottom line is it was to politically offset their numbers. And the problem between the Indo-Trinidadians and Trinidadian Africans has been like that ever since, because that was the purpose of bringing in this other group, was to offset the political power and numbers of the black folks. In this country, it's the same thing that's happening to you all. It's that you have groups being brought in, and those people are given benefits by the people in control. They're not taking anything. It's being given to them. If you all were in control, then you could create exactly the sort of political status that you need to make sure that your benefits are not given to anyone else who should not have them based on your unique history. But you don't have that control. So you're blaming people that don't have any control over their situation for what's happening to you. It's just like when the Great Migration happened and white people in the North were being told that black people were leaving down south, coming up north to take their jobs. And they had riots in every city across the United States. They were lynching black people in the streets in cities like Detroit, New York City. They would just wholesale have race riots where they would just drag black people out the house and kill them. And what was really happening was that it was the unions that were keeping black people out of jobs when they came from the South. And it was the political parties that ended up making decisions that were hindering the advancement monetarily of the white people that were already in the city. But they used the migration of the blacks from the South as the excuse. White people fell for it. And then you had this infighting. Again, it's basically making sure that another Bacon's Rebellion doesn't happen. And now you just have the same thing happening amongst black people that are born here versus the people who are coming in as quote unquote immigrants from outside of the United States. And I think it's completely incorrect in the regards of its application as a separatist tool. I think that it's a necessity, and I support that movement because you should get what's due to your people's blood is in the soil here, you know, and that is just the way it is. We can't help the fact that our ancestors did not fight for exactly what you're looking for today. They did the best that they could at that particular time. And the mindset that we have today in regards to the issue was not necessarily the mindset holistically that people had back then. So you can't even blame them for it. They were doing the best they could in a system of white supremacy where they were getting killed and terrorized wholesale.
Well, Roz,
so there's a lot that goes into this. Go ahead.
Roz, we got to get on out of here. But before you hit us with the prayer, it looked like Brother Scotty got a question or a statement. But we're going to come to real quick in a second, Scotty. But you hit it right on the head. It goes back to that infighting, like you said. And if we fighting amongst each other, then we're separated to fight them. I'm going to leave it there. Go ahead, Brother Scott.
Yeah, I just wanted to come in on some of the points that Ross brought up. I'm glad that he mentioned, though, you know, when it comes to reparations, then you should be demanding reparations. If you come from Jamaica, Britain, the UK owes you reparations. If you coming from the Virgin Islands, I think that's the UK as well. Might be the Dutch, depending upon which Virgin Islands you talking about. Yep. But when you talking about the United States, we're talking about the descendants of those who were enslaved here. Actually, I had gotten into what you might call a Twitter beef with some ADOS. And I think it was some misunderstanding, but at the end of the day, we hashed it out and we closed it out on good terms with each other. But I'm saying this ADOS movement ain't nothing new. Okay. Right. And, you know, they have put out a platform, which is good. And, you know, I also compared it to the, not saying that they the same, but just to show the history of black people pushing for these very things. You look at the 10-point plan by the Black Panther Party, okay? It's even more radical than what the ATOS, you know, originators, Yvette Carneal and Antonio Moore have put out. So I have seen what you're talking about, but I think, you know, some of the people, they already was hating on other people anyway. The ADOS is just another avenue to express that. You know what I'm saying? And some of it just has to do with individuals' level of maturity and understanding struggle, in my opinion. And so, but I see that there's blame on both sides. You know, I came across a Liberian when I was in college. I was going to community college in Charlotte, and, you know, I got on the bus, sat next to this, you know, not right next to her, but on the same back row as this a girl from Liberia that was going to the same school, man. And just her body language and her turning up her nose. And I hadn't even opened my mouth. You know what I'm saying? And there are some Africans who look down on ADOS, no matter or descendants of slave, period, no matter where they are. Okay. Yeah, it's that class thing. Okay. So I think that that's always going to be present, but of course you should work to minimize it. Now, I watched Yvette Carnell's last video, and, you know, I understand about being focused on the agenda. You know, I created the New Abolitionist Movement back in 2014. This is before Ava DuVernay came out with the 13th documentary, before this other black filmmaker had his thing mentioned in the 13th on CNN. And, you know, I by no means created awareness around the 13th Amendment because, you know, the Black Panther Party and others were doing it back in the 60s. But up until the point of you know, 2014, I wasn't seeing it, period, by issue by anybody. And I'm glad the ADOS community in their agenda listed the 13th Amendment, even though they're not calling for its repeal and replacement. Now, does that mean that I got to be narrow-minded or have a narrow vision to where I can't address global white supremacy? Because I heard her say, like, you know, we shouldn't be concerned about what happens to black people in other places in the world. And I'm like, wait a minute. I can walk and chew bubblegum at the same time. We're dealing with a global system. We may be in the belly of the beast, but it's still global. And we need allies. Even in reparations, you got the international community saying ADOS needs reparations. So you don't want to cut off potential allies just because they may be from a different area of the world. But, you know, she just, you know, I just thought that that was pretty narrow. Not, I don't want to say narrow-minded, but I feel like it's regressing black struggle, the tradition of black struggle. I can still demand from the U.S. government reparations for American descendants of victims of slavery. And at the same time, I can also apply political pressure through my voice by whatever in global white supremacy, especially the militarism. OK, you know, we should know that the American DOS is the big reason why apartheid failed in South Africa. We have been a leader on many of these issues, man. And I'm just concerned that we become narrow-minded to think that all we got to do is just focus on this and exclude, you know, righteous struggle in other places of the world. I ain't mean to be long-winded, but thanks.
No, thank you. I think everything you said made perfect sense. And the thing is that, I mean, there's so many layers to this, because when you get into this, you're going to get into look at the fact that there were many Caribbean Africans, many people from the continent that contributed to the struggle here. Then you have, what about the black people who own and abuse slaves? Are they going to pay reparations? Should they pay reparations? I say they should. So there's going to be layers to all of this and how this plays out. And I think that it's absolutely correct. Like you said, you know, Trinidad should be going to Britain and Spain, because those are the two places that basically abuse the black people of Trinidad and Tobago. So it's absolutely correct. And it just shouldn't be divisive, because even when you get to the transportation of slaves, the majority of slaves in the mainland of North America came from the Caribbean first. There were very few ships that came from Africa straight to America. Most of the slaves here were island hopped to the United States. In some cases, sent back to seasoning at seasoning plantations and then returned to the United States. So putting yourself into such an isolated position, you're cutting yourself off from people you have direct connections to, whether it's genetically through this island hopping process, culturally, because hip hop wouldn't exist if it wasn't for Caribbean people. They're the ones who founded it. Bambaataa's of Jamaican descent, as is Kool Herc, the two founding fathers. So it's
Wait a minute, Rob, because you posted this, and I actually mentioned this to somebody on the thread about hip hop. You had posted something in BTR community about this tradition in this West African nation where they basically was playing the dozens, but they was rapping.
Yes.
That's where I attribute the beginnings of it to.
Yeah, definitely. Without question. That was from Home Team. He had a great discussion on that tradition in West Africa and how it made its way here. Matter of fact, I think Jenna and I might have talked about it a long time ago on one of the programs.
Yeah, we done. We done talked about it a few times, but as great as this conversation is, we got to get on out of here.
We're going to pick it up next week. Sorry, folks. It's just been a powerful discussion. Appreciate each and every one of you for being with us. Thank you so much, Brother Scotty. You chimed in with some great, great information and a great addition to the conversation. Brother Cujo, we appreciate your insight and input as well. Absolutely. Hopefully we'll see both of you all next week and we can continue the discussion. Thanks to all the callers and listeners for being with us this evening. Please, 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 everyone, continue to support Black Talk Radio Network. For $24 a year, you can become a full member. And
it's never too late.
Scotty, I don't remember off the top of the head, but Scotty elucidated some incredible benefits to moving forward in doing so. Please help us to keep this platform alive and thriving. And Dave always says, if you eat of the fruit, you got to feed the roots. Let's give back so we can keep this thing going for all of us to continue to convey this information and have these poignant discussions with each other. We're about to close out the show. Again, thank you all for spending your Tuesday evening with us or into the night. Creator, we ask that you help us to remain patient with other Black people, victims of white supremacy. We ask that you help us to remain patient with ourselves. Remind us to demonstrate the highest levels of Black self-respect at all times in all places, each and every time that we are in contact with another Black person. It has been time. Let's replace white supremacy with justice ASAP. Let's end slave prison industrial complex slavery and human trafficking as well. I am in the love of the all, and all love is in me. I am a part of the all, and the all is a part of me. I am one with the all, and the all is one with me. I can succeed as a part of the all and fail as an individual. I can be all that I wish in the all as long as my wish is to stay in the all. I am never alone. The all is I am. The all can I can. The all does I do. Once again, thank you all for spending your Tuesday evening with us. We greatly appreciate it. We look forward to seeing you all next week. Creator willing, please stay safe and out of the hands of slave catchers. And we'll see you again next week. One love and good night.
One love. Before I go, just remember, if you receive anything from these shows, $24 a year. During a time when there is so much boasting about the Black businesses that people support, don't let one of the longest running media platforms disappear. Peace and love. See you next week.
Thank you. One love. Good night.
Not a hunter, but I'm told that in places like in the Arctic, where indigenous people sometimes might hunt a wolf, they'll take a double-edged blade and they'll put blood on the blade and they'll melt the ice and stick the handle in the ice so that only the blade is protruding. and that a wolf will smell the blood and